Hodgdon Powder Company is celebrating 75 years in business and continues to expand with the addition of accurate and ramshot powders that are easy to load. Hodgdon Powder Company, the gunpowder people.
Well, hello and welcome again. I'm Tom Gresham. Welcome to Gun Talk. Yeah, it's Father's Day. We're going to be talking a good bit about that. If you got a story about your dad you'd like to share, by all means, give us a shout. We'll talk about that. 866-TALK-GUN is the number here. A lot of folks learned to shoot, got started in hunting, just have great memories of their fathers. And, you know, teaching sons and daughters about safe gun handling and shooting. And there's just tons of stories out there, and I'm going to be sharing a few of those myself because I got a special reason to do that this week. I'll tell you about that in just a second. But we do have some news breaking. the quote-unquote framework, you know, the one where 10 Republican and 10 Democrat senators all got together and came up with this uber compromise on gun control because we have to, quote-unquote, do something. That's the hashtag that's making its way around. We have to do something, of course, ignoring the fact that for 50 years, gun owners, through various organizations and individually, have been doing something, teaching safe gun handling, teaching safe, responsible gun storage, teaching people to shoot guns safely, handing out tens of millions of free gun locks so people can lock their guns away when and if they choose or want to or need to. We're the gun safety people, although the gun control people have tried to and actually been pretty successful at grabbing onto that term and using that and try to confuse everything. They say now they're the gun safety people when, in point of fact, for them, gun safety means nobody has a gun. And they say, well, that would be safe. Well, actually, no, it wouldn't. Because you have all these people, millions and millions of people who use guns to protect themselves and their children, and their families, and other people, every year. Every year, more than 1 million people use guns in self-defense in the United States. So, no, getting rid of all guns would not make them safer. It would make them victims. Yeah. So, anyway, we have this compromise that's been set up, this framework. Now, understand, there's no copy here. There's no text. There's no words. There's nothing written. There's no draft. There's no bill. It's just a loose agreement of here's some things we think we can get together on. And then we had this week, John Cornyn, he's the lead on the Republican side. Texas Senator John Cornyn goes to the state meeting of Republicans and gets booed for 11 straight minutes. Booed with chance of no red flags. Booed because of his efforts to support and push gun control. Booed because he had completely lost track of what it is to be a Texan, lost track of what his constituents want. His constituents don't want more gun control. I mean, and here's the thing. Look, I get it. You get to D.C., you start going to the cocktail parties, you read the Washington Post, you're besieged by lobbyists, and you start to think, oh, this would be a reasonable thing to do. Because that's all you hear in the media. Reasonable, reasonable, reasonable. Can't you people just compromise? And I say, you know what? We've been compromising for 50 years. Every single gun control law is a compromise. And the compromise is, and you got to understand that, this is the gun banners' form of compromise. It means they don't get everything they want. They don't get to ban all the guns. But they get some of what they want. What do we get? We don't lose all our guns at once. We just lose some of our rights as we go along. That's their form of compromise. We get nothing. We get nothing. That is not a compromise. And yet some of the Republicans think they've been doing this for so long. And that's been, frankly, and look, to be honest, in times past, that was the best we were going to do, is to lose less rather than lose more. That's not where we are today. But these folks, a lot of them have been doing this for so long, they can't break out of that mold of thinking, well, it's a good compromise if we only lose a little bit. No, 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 no more. No more compromise. Not one inch, not one gun law, not one gun right, nothing. You get nothing. And Senator Cornyn, after he had his wake-up call by being booed viciously, within a few hours, announced that he was walking away from the so-called framework. So maybe he is, in fact, educable and trainable. It's the rolled-up newspaper method, of course. You swat him on the nose. What happens from this point forward? I don't know. We did have the wild card thing that happened here. Talk about your wild cards. Let's see here. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC. God, you got to love her. She is just so much fun to watch. She has, at this point, ticked off most of the Democrats by announcing that the framework, quote-unquote framework, to create a, quote-unquote, common-sense gun control bill is, in fact, racist. And the Democrats should not be involved with it. Well, I understand why the Democrats would be upset with her for saying that, because it pretty much sabotages the whole thing. At the same time, I have to give her some credit here, because she is, in fact, historically correct. All gun control is racist. It's racist in its origins, where it originally came from. Because remember, all gun control is either racist or elitist, whichever you prefer, because the idea is to keep guns away from those people, whatever those people are. It could be blacks, it could be poor people, it could be rural people, it could be people you just don't trust, people you don't like. I mean, it doesn't matter. All gun control is about keeping guns away from, thus keeping power away from, quote unquote, those people. And historically, it's been directed very largely at the black population in the U.S., disarming them, keeping them in permanent victim status. And so AOC correctly calls gun control racist. But the problem is her party really, really likes gun control. And she has screwed the whole thing up for them. This all happened actually in the afternoon on Friday. We're talking on Sunday. So nothing happening this weekend that I'm aware of. I think this probably puts the nail in the coffin for this framework compromise. And that's a very good thing. I will compromise on gun control law. Don't think I have no compromise in me. I will. We will start off by repealing only half the gun control laws in existence rather than repealing them all. And as the gun control people like to say, whenever they get a gun control law passed, if I can repeal half of the gun laws, that would be a good first step. We'll work our way toward the rest of them. Since, because, you know, there absolutely is no evidence that any gun control law in the U.S. has ever reduced crime. The CDC, Centers for Disease Control, actually did a survey of 51 studies on gun control, and the CDC said it could come up with no evidence that gun control laws have ever reduced crime or reduced violence. And yet we keep wanting to do it. The Democrats do. And I hate to make this a Democrat versus Republican thing, because I'm not real fond of a lot of the Republicans, but that's just the way the votes break on the thing. So that's where we are. So that's your news right now. Tell you what, quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about my dad. It is Father's Day. He is the guy who got me into this thing. I'll share some stories with you. Be right back.
Whether it's for self-defense, a serious emergency, or everyday carry, a quality Surefire light can be a lifesaver. Surefire pushes the limits of handheld and weapon-mounted lights to give you the upper hand when it matters most. Manufactured right here in the USA, Surefire delivers high-performance illumination with no compromise. Go with a proven performer. Go Surefire. Find yours now at Surefire.com.
Visit GunTalk.com/win to enter GunTalk's latest giveaway. Two grand prize winners will receive the Rock Island Armory TM-22 20 or 18-inch rifle with $200 of Norma USA's TAC-22 ammunition, Three additional winners will receive $200 of Norma USA's NXD or MHP defensive ammunition. Enter now through June 30th at guntalk.com/win.
911, what's your emergency?
Being forced to defend your life can be terrifying, but what comes after can be just as terrible. That's why so many law-abiding people trust U.S. Law Shield to help prepare and protect them. Their Legal Defense for Self-Defense program is the powerful protection you need to confidently defend yourself and others. Join today at uslawshield.com. In California, Law Shield Member Insurance Services. Visit uslawshield.com for terms, conditions, and licensing information.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest capacity micro compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, the class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
Back with you. It is Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. If your dad is around, hope you're able to give him a call, say hello, share some stories, share some memories, share some things that were important to you that you remember he may not remember. Because sometimes when you're a youngster, there are things that make an impression on you that your father's really not understanding that that was a big deal. It's kind of fun to hear those stories. I grew up very fortunate. I was born to a great couple. My mom and dad were both terrific. And I understand how fortunate I was to grow up in a really good family. My dad was instrumental in so many things, basically pretty much everything I do for work, everything I do for my passions. Dad was Grits Gresham. If you look him up on YouTube or anywhere else, just Google it. You'll see what he did, what he was able to do. A lot of people knew him from his Miller beer commercials, part of that campaign of Taste Great, Less Filling. He was one of those athletes there. He was kind of the designated fisherman, if you will. The cowboy hat, the big sideburns. He was shooting editor of Sports Fuel magazine for 27 years. Before that, he wrote for True, Argosy, Gentleman's Quarterly, a whole bunch of magazines. He wrote a number of books on guns, shooting, and fishing, because he was known just as much for being a famous fisherman as for being a hunter and shooter. His background was, he was an athlete. Actually, we didn't even know it. Interestingly enough, talk about poignant. We didn't even know it until after he died that he had been signed to the Chicago Cubs to play for them. He was a great baseball player, evidently, but coming out of World War II, when they wanted to sign him, there was really no money in professional baseball, and he was married and had a kid, so he couldn't do it. After he died, we actually found the papers. Interestingly enough, he never told us about that. I guess he couldn't talk about it or think about it. It was probably just, his dream vanished at that point. He was Army Air Corps. He was a smart kid from a small town, Ware Shoals, South Carolina. Went to University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, then to Vanderbilt, then to Yale. The Army Air Corps wanted to send him to MIT, wanted him to work on the Manhattan Project. He found a way out of that and ended up going to LSU, where he got his undergraduate and graduate degrees in forestry and wildlife management. Then he worked, of course, the ABC television show, The American Sportsman, really a pioneer in outdoor TV. And then somewhere along the line, he and I were able to co-host Shooting Sports America on ESPN, which was really great fun. We actually been able to put some of those videos up on our Gun Talk website. You can go take a look at that. Talk about dated. Holy cow. Us wearing our blue polyester sport coats, blazers, with ESPN stickers on them. It was fun. I learned a lot. He was definitely my inspiration. I remember when I was real little, him teaching me gun safety and quizzing me. I remember one question he asked me, because he would throw out these questions all the time. which is more dangerous, a rifle or a shotgun? And I remember saying, well, they're equally dangerous because both of them can kill you if they're misused. And that was my answer. Growing up son of a gun writer, we had guns all the time. Everything that was new was sent to our house. It was a time when there really were probably less than a dozen gun writers. And so the gun makers, Remington, Winchester, all of them, when something came out, they just sent one to each of the gun writers. They did not ever want to see them back. They didn't want them returned. It was crazy. We had walls and walls of rifles and shotguns with the hang tags still on. And I would just say, hey, can I take a gun? Well, sure. And at that point, I could, when I finally got to where I could drive at 15 in Louisiana, full driver's license at 15, I would just go take a few guns and go out and drive out to the gravel pit and shoot them. Part of that, of course, who knew at the time, right? Now I go back when people are asking me questions about something. Oh, yeah, the Remington 700. Yeah, we had six of those. We had a Remington 600 and the 660. We had four of those. Two in 350 Remington Mag, one in 6mm, and one in 6.5 Remington Magnum. A true orphan cartridge, but one of the original good 6.5 cartridges. So a lot of the stuff that I know now came from that. And then, of course, I ended up becoming a writer. I remember something just occurred to me. You know how you have those pivotal moments as you're growing up? And for me, one of them was, I'd started taking pictures. And Dad was, teaching me photography. He was a very good photographer. And he was needing some pictures for one of his books. And I was 13 at the time. And so I was out shooting pictures of him. It was actually a fishing book. And I remember this clearly because it was such a moment where he's out in front and I'm running the camera and he said simply this, four words, how does that look? He asked me at 13 to use my judgment, how does that look through the viewfinder? Yeah, I was hooked. I ended up being a photographer, still am. Shot pictures for a lot of different magazines, ended up writing for magazines, editing magazines, and then getting into TV. And then, of course, this crazy gig, 27 years on the air doing radio, Gun Talk Radio. He was supportive. He was fun. He was a compatriot of a lot of celebrities. Bing Crosby, Phil Harris, the voice of Baloo the Bear, as well as a lot of other things. Dolly Parton, the famous interview that Dad did one-on-one with Ronald Reagan, broke a story about Ronald Reagan using a gun to save a nurse who was being mugged. Crazy stuff. Kings, presidents, celebrities. And yet he was always approachable. People could just come up and say, hey, Gritz. And it was just talk, shooting, hunting, guns, fishing. Didn't really matter. I realized that my childhood wasn't like a lot of people's. I would come home and say, where's Dad? Oh, he's in Montana. Okay. Where's Dad? Oh, he's in Columbia. We're not talking Columbia, Louisiana, near where we lived. We're talking about the country of Columbia. Okay. That's just what he did. Crazy stuff, huh? Hey, Garrett's called in on line three. I want to share a story. Hey, Garrett, how are you, sir?
I am good, Tom. I just wanted to call, this being Father's Day and all, I really wanted to tell the story since last Father's Day, but I didn't call in time. I just wanted to share a story about my first time going shooting. I was about 10 years old, and all of a sudden, my dad pulls out this single-shot 22, shot of a paint can probably about 20 yards away, but that single-shot 22 was actually bought by his granddaddy. Back in the Great Depression, he saved his money trapping furs, sent his money order to the with the order form from the Sears Roebuck catalog, and the next thing you know, it ended up at the front door of his house. Back when you could get guns shipped to your house.
Sure, yeah, they just mail them to your house.
Absolutely.
I've
been interested in guns.
Do you still have that gun?
I don't. My dad has it. It's sitting in his safe still. I doubt he'll ever give it up until he passes it or until he croaks, which hopefully is a long time from now.
There you go. I appreciate it. Great story. I appreciate that, Garrett. Yeah, we all have these, or a lot of us do have these stories. Terrific, terrific stuff. The interesting part, well, one of the reasons I wanted to bring up the longer version of the story about my dad is that on Tuesday, 2 days from now, dad would have turned 100. And I have this, I don't think it's going to happen, but it just would be so cool if the Supreme Court would release the New York case, the Bruin case, on that day. I remember going to Washington, D.C. with dad many, many years ago when I was young, and watching him corner Louisiana Senator Russell Long, almost pushing him up against a wall and getting in his face about gun control, because Russell Long was one of those compromisers, was going to go along with gun control. And dad was an absolutist. His deal was, you know, no, absolutely no. I remember one time I said, we may have to settle for something on this one because it's looking kind of bad. And his response was, why? Why would we ever compromise on anything? And, you know, I was probably in my little mid-20s. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. So he was we're talking way back. He was a gun rights absolutist from the very beginning. And being a natural athlete, man, the guy could shoot. Holy cow. I remember he was hunting with our good buddy Ray Elgin, we've had on the show here before. And we were hunting ducks, and I was in another blind about 200 yards from him. I could see him. These four ducks head toward their blind. And Ray was an All-American trap shooter. And I hear bang, bang, just two shots. Four birds fall. They both shot the correct bird at exactly the right time. So four shots sounded like two shots. Bang, bang, four ducks are falling and hit the water. It was amazing. So just fun stuff. You can share your stories about your dad and hunting and guns right here. Give me a call, 866-TALK-GUN. We have a bunch of folks lined up. Got a good show ahead of us. We're going to be talking about competitive shooting, classic arms, and yeah, gun rights and what's going on at the NRA. Don't go far. Hey, welcome back to Gun Talk. If you want to be a part of the mess here, 866-TALK-GUN gets you in here. I'm Tom Gresham. Oh, yeah, you can check out Gun Talk on the web, guntalk.com. You can find out. We always have giveaways going. Just go ahead and check out guntalk.com/win to see what the package is this month. You never know, but it's a lot of good stuff over there. Let's see. It is kind of, I was going to say the beginning of, but it's really not. We're well into the competition season for shooting and all different kinds of shooting events. But a lot of people don't have any idea how many different kinds of shooting competitions there are. Trap, skeet, sporting, clays. You got high power, traditional bullseye pistol. You got a long range competition now that it's a variation of. We used to call long range like the 600 yard stuff at Camp Perry, and now we got even longer range than that. And of course, you got IDPA, USPSA, action pistol, which all came from PPC. I mean, it goes on and on. And then of course, three gun. Well, what's it take to become a good shooter? Well, what was the old line? So how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. But there's more to it than that. And somebody who's actually very good at this and knows a lot of this stuff is Tess Salb. She joins us right now. She's a competitive shooter, also the director of communications for Hi-Vis. Hey, Tess, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. How goes the season?
It's good. Very, very busy, but it's very good.
Where have you been shooting?
This year, pretty much just been at home lately, honestly, been working really hard, but I'm looking to travel around the U.S. a little bit more come the end of summer and through the fall.
Okay, so you're going to kind of hit the tail end, the back half of the season for your shooting then?
Yes, I am. I am.
Are you getting to practice at all?
I do. I do a lot of dry firing at home, but I actually, when I work a lot or when I'm traveling a lot for work, I focus more on the fitness aspect of it all. So,
well, I was going to ask you about that, because I know that you are a fitness, shall we say, fanatic. I mean, this is serious stuff to you. And the question I'm asking is, people think, okay, yeah, if you're going to be doing physical action sports, you got to work out, you got to be fit. Where does this play in terms of the shooting sports?
Well, a little bit of my background. I actually got into the shooting sports through modern pentathlon, and that includes five different sports of running, swimming, shooting, fencing, and horseback riding. And mm-hmm. so I learned early on how important the other sports actually affected and improved my shooting. So that's one thing that I have carried on with me throughout my career, and I believe it's been a differentiator for me on the field compared to a lot of others out there. And when you think about it, there are 10 general components to fitness that they measure fitness on, and they include cardiovascular respiratory endurance, stamina, mm-hmm. strength, flexibility, power, speed, coordination, agility, balance, and accuracy. And one that I kind of add in there too for that really applies to shooting is reaction time. The first four things that we talk about are more organic and measurable under a microscope. But the number one thing at the top of the list that helps me with shooting is cardiovascular respiratory endurance. And that's pretty much the body's ability to transfer oxygen. And one thing that people don't really take into account a lot of times with shooting is that your eyes require a lot of oxygen in order to see the sights correctly and to take information in. And so improving your cardiovascular respiratory endurance is one of the most important things for shooting that anybody in any shooting sport can actually benefit from. The better your body can transfer oxygen, the more you're going to benefit from it.
Okay, let me put a personal twist to that, because I'm a pilot, okay. and we learned that flying at night, you need to be on oxygen above about 5,000 feet, and at 8,000 feet, if you take the oxygen off, the stars disappear. When you put the oxygen back on, you can see the stars again, which goes exactly to what you're talking about. Your eyes need oxygen, which means they need, you know, as much air to process. And if your body isn't able to do that, your vision's going to suffer.
Absolutely. I've never heard that analogy, or I've never heard that happening before, but that's fascinating. But definitely, I feel like the same thing transfers to shooting. If your eyes aren't able to read things correctly, you can't see the sight picture. And it doesn't matter if you're shooting a red dot, if you're shooting open sights or reticle. That's one of the most important things in shooting. If you can't see correctly, you're not going to hit your target right. So,
interesting. The other thing is, you know, a lot of the shooting you do now, the popular sports involve movement and action. You're running, you're stopping, you're shooting. I kind of almost liken it to, we think about biathlon, where they just go like crazy and then they have to stop. And I call it like threading a needle, shooting, you know, 22 rifles at small targets. If you can't process the oxygen, you're in a world of hurt at that point.
Absolutely. So the cardiovascular respiratory endurance is the one that I feel the easiest for anybody to actually start practicing, because it doesn't require equipment. However, when you get to the firing line, it is very important that you're able to lower your heart rate, transfer oxygen better. But that's also where the last four come into play of coordination, agility, balance, and accuracy. When you're starting to do sports there, you move and things like that. Those things are very important, and those are what we consider neurological. So those are the ones where it determines or how your mind and your body connect together. And so, one, if you increase oxygen and then you do physical fitness or something to help train those last four, you're going to actually be a better athlete on the firing line, regardless of what shooting sport you do. But most particularly, you're going to be better in those that require action, such as biathlon, USPSA, IDPA, three-gun, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I see pictures of you picking up heavy weights. Is strength training important, and if so, why?
I do, yes, it is. I believe it is very important. As I said, if you do strength training, you can actually improve all of the 10 general physical skills. It requires flexibility, it requires coordination, it requires balance, and also cardiovascular endurance. And so doing a little bit of strength training, is not mandatory, but it is definitely helpful in all shooting sports. You don't have to lift 300 pounds on a deadlift per se to have benefits of strength training. But in the shooting sports, one of the things that we do is lift a small weight for your firearm time and time again. And over right. time, that can actually create imbalances throughout your body. But also, if you do it multiple, if you do have a long course of fire throughout a day, you actually are accumulating a larger percentage of weight that you have moved. And so strength training outside of the shooting sports can actually help prevent injury, and it can help create body balance, which I know a lot of shooters sometimes get imbalances because they stand in one position or they only shoot with their strong hand. And so doing strength training outside of the shooting sports can actually benefit you.
I remember shooting doves in Argentina. You know, you're shooting 500 or 1,000 birds a day. Mm-hmm. And toward the end of the second day, I absolutely could not pick up the gun fast enough to swing to get in front of a bird. I was toast at that point.
Right, because even a shotgun at that point, is it doesn't weigh, five to seven pounds. But you lift that 500 times, and that's a lot of weight moved.
It is. It really is. Okay, question for you. Would yoga help?
Absolutely. I actually define fitness as any program that is motivating to you and that you are willing to show up for. But that's something that is not – a lot of people discount that. They say, well, that's not interesting to me, so I'm just not going to do it. And I'm like, well, find something that can. But, yoga is great. It actually helps with flexibility. It helps with oxygen transfer, coordination, mm-hmm. agility, and balance, and accuracy. And those things are all really important in all shooting sports.
All right. I'm going to have to wrap it up. I need you to tell me about Hi-Viz. What are you doing there, and what's Hi-Viz up to these days?
I'm the director of marketing and communication, and we make tritium fiber optic and fiber optic sights for rifles, pistols, and shotguns. And we're just out here trying to make the world of shooting better, help people hit more targets and have more fun.
And once you start using these sights, it's kind of like, holy cow, somebody just turned on the lights. This is great.
They are great in my, and we have a lot, an interlocking light pipe system, which is patented just to us, which is also helpful whenever your day, the light changes from day to afternoon. You can interchange your light pipes based on stages or lighting as you need.
Very cool. What's the website for Hi-Viz?
It's hivizsites.com.
There you go. Tess, thank you so much for being here. We're going to get you back when we can talk about this at greater length, okay?
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
All right, we'll do that. Take care. All right, 866-TALK-GUN. Gun Talk will be right back.
Ballistic Advantage manufactures precision quality rifle barrels, uppers, lowers, and other firearm components for a range of users. Men and women who expect and whose lives may depend on a barrel that delivers round after round consistently, accurately, and with minimal recoil. Ballistic Advantage is the perfect mix of U.S. craftsmanship and state-of-the-art manufacturing. Barrels from Ballistic Advantage rank among the best money can buy, while prices rank among the best value. Find yours at ballisticadvantage.com.
For over 75 years, the Hodgdon family and Hodgdon Powder Company employees have been passionate about hunting and the shooting sports. Hodgdon is now the largest U.S. supplier of smokeless powder and black powder substitute propellants. Hodgdon continues to expand with the addition of Accurate Powders and Ramshot to the Hodgdon family. Offering the same standard of quality, the Accurate and Ramshot brands make it easier to load and are available as rifle, handgun, and shot shell powders. Hodgdon Powder Company, the gunpowder people.
Mental health and guns. At Walk the Talk America, we are working with both the mental health community and the gun industry. Created by a gun industry veteran, Walk the Talk America seeks to raise awareness and create change through suicide prevention and firearm safety without legislation. We strive to eliminate the prejudice that firearms and mental health face. For more information and to support Walk the Talk America, please visit walkthetalkamerica.org.
It's here, the all-American-made VRF-14 from Rock Island Armory's U.S. manufacturing facility, RIA USA. The VRF-14 is a one-of-a-kind firearm, both in looks and performance. A semi-automatic with a short 14-inch barrel, the VRF-14 has a pistol-style grip so you can shoot 12-gauge shells from the hip. Compact, powerful, fun to shoot. Learn more at armscore.com/VRF14.
do. You win some, you lose some. We're winning in gun rights, I think, in the courts a good bit. Right now, we're losing in some of the states significantly. Delaware just passed a whole laundry list of gun control laws. The governor's going to sign them into law. Banning semi-automatic guns. They call them assault weapons. Banning standard capacity magazines. They call them high capacity. And here's the thing. You're not grandfathered in. If you own them, they were legal, and then they won't be. You have to turn them in. Or I call it just confiscation. You can turn them in, you can give them away, you can sell them, but you can't own them anymore. After they told you could. This is the nasty little secret about gun control. They'll say, yeah, you can own that until you can't. Until we tell you you can't, then you got to get rid of it or you got to turn it in. And that's been the history through the years. And I do not like it when people say, oh, they allow concealed carry. No. They don't allow anything. Governments can only prohibit. They can't allow. The difference is huge. The difference is everything. Governments prohibit. The Second Amendment is not about allowing anything. It's not about granting any rights. The Second Amendment is about prohibiting the government. When you read it, it doesn't say we grant a right. It doesn't say we allow anything. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This is a prohibition against the federal government and now against the states after the McDonald decision coming out of the Supreme Court incorporated the Second Amendment. CNN's up to its old tricks. Back in 1993, in preparation for the 1994 Clinton gun ban, a.k.a. the assault weapons ban, they ran, not misleading, but just lies. Every time they would talk about semi-automatic guns, they would show a video of full automatic machine guns. Intentionally misleading, confusing, and misinforming the public into thinking this law is about machine guns. And then, remember, this was before the radio show. I was writing for Guns and Ammo magazine. In one of their stories, they quoted an ATF agent as saying that semi-automatic rifles like the AR-15 factor in a majority of the murders. I'm going, wait, what? That's not right. That can't be right. So I started tracking it down. I contacted CNN. They wouldn't respond to me. But weirdly enough, they actually named by name the ATF agent who supposedly had said this. I was able to track him down in Washington, D.C. and talk to him. He said, nobody from CNN has ever talked to me. And if they had, I would have told them exactly the opposite, that AR-15s are almost negligible in terms of their impact on crime. They simply made it up. They lied. They made up a quote and attributed it to somebody. And because this was even before internet, nobody could challenge it. Nobody could track it down. I tracked it down. I challenged them on it. And then they said, well, we're gonna withdraw that. They said, well, that person who did that story no longer works here. Don't know if that's true. But it did establish their decades-long history of fake news, of lying, of misleading, of fake footage. It's what they do. 866-TALK-GUN will get you in here. I'm Tom Gresham. This is Gun Talk. It's Father's Day, so we're taking calls. If you want to share a story about your dad, shooting, fishing, hunting, doesn't matter, whatever. We'll take that. 866-TALK-GUN. Ron called in. He's in Reno. He's got a story. Hey, Ron, tell me your story.
Well, you know, you're talking about your dad and hunting and such. My dad had an old 30-30 octagon barrel, long barrel 30-30 that he got when he was a kid, and he passed away not too long ago at 92 years old. But anyway, and the story with him, he taught us to to shoot and everything, and we had to learn how to shoot a 25-35 before we could graduate to the 30-30.
Oh.
And one time we were out, well, my brothers and I in 1959, five of us, we went down and bought the new 264 Magnums. We thought we were big time, you know, with our Magnums.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so we were deer hunting. We were up on a hill, and there was a little old buck running down the hill. And my dad says, I ought to shoot him. I think I'll shoot him right behind the ear. And that was a good 400 yards. And I said, he can't even see his ear hardly, let alone, and bang, you know. And I said, you missed him. And he says, I hadn't got there yet. About that time, he went end over end. And sure enough, right behind the ear.
Oh, my gosh.
He was a great shot with that 30-30. That's, you know, he took elk and everything with that. I mean, just amazed me.
You know, it's amazing when somebody owns one, the old phrase of beware of a man with only one gun because he probably knows how to use it. Those guys got really good with those guns.
I do, you know. I just think back on that, and I go, man. And that was open sights, too, you know, of course, you know.
Right, of course, yeah. And you got lead, you got drop, you got the rest of it, you put it all together. Ron, thank you for the story. I love that. That is just terrific. Oh, I had to share this one. We're talking about the things the gun banners say and do, and AOC saying, yeah, well, we can't support this framework because it's racist. Well, she's right. But this one, I remember. It's a New York assembly person, Patrick Eddington. She was at a gun grab rally with Congresswoman Carolyn McCarthy. Remember her? She was the one who said the barrel shroud is a shoulder thing that goes up. But this Patricia Eddington says this: some of these bullets, as you saw, have an incendiary device on the tip of it, which is a heat-seeking device. So you don't shoot deer with a bullet that size. If you do, you could cook it at the same time. And these are the people who, for some reason, think we should pay attention to them. It'd be like saying, well, the problem with your Ford truck is that it will fly and also is a submarine. And we can't have that. You're going, are you mental? You know so little about the subject that it would be laughable if you didn't have the power to try to impose your will upon us and strip us of not rights given to us by the Constitution, but rights given to us by God, because these are human rights or natural rights that existed before the creation of our country, which existed before the creation of our Constitution, which we had inherent in us before the Second Amendment was written. That is the right to stay alive, the right to protect ourselves, the right to protect our families. That is an inherent human right. And it's only stated in the Second Amendment. It's not granted in the Second Amendment. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed is a restriction on the government, not upon us. 866-TALK-GUN. When we come back, classic guns and gun rights right here on Gun Talk.